Hi everyone, thank you for tuning in to Season 2 of InCorp Global's Pro Business Podcast Series. For Season 2, InCorp is pleased to partner the Singapore Economic Development Board, or EDB in short, to deep dive into pertinent growth sectors in Southeast Asia and discuss potential business opportunities for companies looking to expand in the region. I'm Alfred, InCorp's Chief Commercial Officer and your host for this episode. Very briefly, InCorp provides an integrated and extensive suite of corporate solutions and business advisory services across 8 markets in Asia-Pacific. Please do visit our website at www.incorp.asia and subscribe to our YouTube channel to access more business insights and content. For today's episode, it is my pleasure to welcome Mr. Kenny Ng, who is the EDB's Regional Director for North America and is based in New York, and our esteemed guest, Mr. James Lim, who is the Executive Vice President and President for Asia-Pacific at Fortune 500 and global medtech company Becton Dickinson. Together with Kenny and James, we will explore Southeast Asia's medical technology, or medtech in short, landscape in this episode. Good day, gentlemen. Kenny, can I get you to kick us off with a quick self-introduction?
Hi. Well, first of all, thank you for having me. It's really a pleasure to join both InCorp and James on tonight's podcast. So my name is Kenny, and I'm the regional director based out here in New York. And you can almost think of me as being the first point of contact for many companies when they think about trying to understand what operating in Asia is like. What are some of the opportunities for partnership and investment in Singapore? So think of me almost as that concierge that help companies assess the region. It's a pleasure to meet you all.
Thank you, Kenny. And how about you, James?
So Alfred and Kenny, thanks for having me. I've been with BD for quite a long time. It's been 28 years, my tenure in this company. I started off actually as engineering manager in the company. I moved on to do quite a few roles in the company. I ran R&D for a while, did automation, became a plant manager, did supply chain and manufacturing across the region. And about 15 years ago, I started my role in commercial, in running the region for Greater Asia for Becton Dickinson, better known as BD. Now, coming to a $4 billion region for the company, the company itself is a $18 billion company. I've seen great growth in the region, driven from Southeast Asia as one of the primary growth drivers. I think it's appropriate that we have this conversation today. So I'm looking forward to the conversation itself.
Thank you, James. It's interesting your experience with Becton Dickinson and across the value chain, right? From business to R&D to manufacturing and so on. And we are definitely excited to have you on this podcast and looking to tap your experience in this region and also across the different functions. Very good to have both of you gentlemen in this episode, and I thought to kick things off, the term medtech is very broad and, in my humble view, encompasses technologies that diagnose, treat, and or improve human health. So maybe, Kenny, if you can start us off today, can you please provide an overview of the medtech landscape in Southeast Asia and share why you are excited by the outlook for medtech in the region?
Now, for me, I think Southeast Asia is a very exciting market for medtech because of two things. So number one, the fast-growing market. It has a population that is growing in size, wealth, and the need or desire for better healthcare. Second of all, the potential for digital transformation to really open up new ways that healthcare is accessed and administered. I think on the first point, McKinsey has reported that by 2023, Asia will eclipse Europe to become the second largest regional market. From 2017 to 2023, Asia will also be the major growth engine among global medtech markets, contributing to about 30% of total incremental growth. Now, what are the drivers? So number one, I think Southeast Asia is a huge market, and the population is expected to grow from 650 million today to 730 million by 2030. I think to put this in context, most people are very surprised to hear that this is nearly the same population size as Europe. So this population remains very underserved in terms of healthcare and represents a major commercial opportunity for medtech companies. Now, the second driver really is fueled by the rising income. 50 million new consumers would join the ranks of the middle class in Indonesia, Malaysia, the Philippines, Thailand, and Vietnam by 2022, making up about 350 million people in total and contributing to the region's 300 billion middle class disposable income. This rising middle class is getting more educated, learning more about healthcare, and they're desiring better healthcare. Now, just to quickly touch on the second point, I think digitalization is expanding rapidly in Southeast Asia, with a base of about 350 million internet and mobile users, and over 3 million people going online for the first time every month. So Southeast Asia has, of course, some of the highest mobile penetration in the world. There's a real opportunity for companies to innovate and really think about how they can transform the way that healthcare is accessed and administered, as patients now have a growing expectation of real-time monitoring and treatment. So, in short, I think that's why the region is a very exciting space for a lot of medtech companies.
Thanks, Kenny. I think you touched on a few important drivers that will fuel the growth of medtech in Asia. And if I may, I would also add, as the population in Southeast Asia is growing, so will the silver population. And there is also an increasing prevalence of chronic diseases and also the rise of consumers taking a more proactive approach to their own health. So James, if I may turn over to you, what are some other trends that you have observed from your vantage point with Becton Dickinson, including the business opportunities that have resulted?
I will support everything that Kenny has mentioned earlier as his two key points, right? So one is the demographics. And actually, let me just emphasize a bit on the demographics. We have a very young population that's in the region. And those are the ones driving the economy very strongly in the region. But you also have a very aging population like Singapore. And this demographic spread gives company many opportunity to do many of the innovative solutions that you want to create across the world. So let me just draw on a parallel between what Kenny has mentioned around digital and the propensity for innovation in the region. And when COVID started, initially everybody was using PCR testing, and as they start to move to ART testing, you can see the innovation that Singapore, for example, has created with the Trace Together, linking with the GovTech system, and how you open up economies using digital enablers in terms of registration. And this innovation, in my opinion, didn't come even in the US, right? It came from here. It was jointly done together, participating with very active governments that is interested in promoting healthcare and the seamless economic opening up. So I think when you look at solutions for companies like us in multinational, why do you want to participate here? It's because you can create innovation, right, that is used somewhere else. Now, let me quote another example that is outside Singapore. If you ever travel to Malaysia, you will know that even ART testing can be done over the video link with mydoctor.com. And that is another innovation that came from here, right? You don't even have to visit the clinic. You can be far away. This opened up access to healthcare using digital that could leapfrog some of the traditional brick and mortar setup that you have for primary care and things like that, with innovative devices that is coming out around the world. It is not just technology that's going to enable it. So it's really looking at what the end customer wants to do. That means governments, healthcare providers, what are they trying to provide the population with? And then integrating that device that you create into a solution that governments are looking to provide. And I gave ART testing as a very live example of it. Having also to add on to what Kenny has said, besides just digital, you can have talent from everywhere trying to create this innovation platform. I think this is one area where we want to tap on all the potential that we have in Southeast Asia. You can also see government, hopefully with the COVID, healthcare is becoming a priority. It has always been a priority, but not the top priority, as the GDP spend per capita on people is actually lagging behind. So if you had the US, I think they're spending about 16. Then you go to Australia, they're spending about 12. And then you go to China, they're spending about 7 or 8 of, you know, Singapore maybe is the largest in the region. But hopefully with this recent focus on lifestyle diseases like cardiovascular and also pandemic, governments are actually focusing a lot more about public health, about lifestyle, cardiovascular health. And this will really spur on more innovation in these areas. And that's where we are interested in.
Thank you, James. I thought you touched on something very pertinent, which is about innovation for a new market like Southeast Asia. There's often perception that Southeast Asia is not sophisticated as a market, and hence when multinationals come into this part of the world, the first approach that they take is a cost-down kind of approach, or rather taking existing products to address the needs of a market like Southeast Asia. How would you say that situation is like right now? Has that evolved? How different is this whole innovation piece for a new market?
I'm always a big fan of what we call innovation on the ground, because the innovation that you need for a developed market like the US could be very different for the innovation that you need to reach large population, not very well connected. And as I mentioned, when you look at GDP spend on healthcare, it is not significant. So you have to create innovation across technology that is really affordable to a certain extent, but it's not just affordability that is really driving it. It's the outcome. If you can get a similar outcome from the way you do it differently, then you are meaningful. And if you look at many innovation around the world of many technology companies, you can think about photography or anything else, iPhone and all this. Fundamentally, innovation comes from solving big problems on the ground, not taking your existing solution and add on more things and become very complicated and all. And then so you think about mobility, it's the same. The innovation around there will come from fundamental base. So I think Southeast Asia is interesting to me because it's a very young population. You can assess the population. You can really develop it. I think it's very dynamic, moving a lot faster. And I think healthcare systems, especially in emerging market, they are more interested in engaging you than I would say some of the developed market are. Some of the developed market feel that they know the way how to move forward the healthcare systems. And rightly so, because they are a lot more ahead of the game. But I think Southeast Asia offer a very unique perspective. They are more open to better solution, innovative solution, affordable solution that creates the same outcome.
Thank you, James. Kenny, turning over to you. I think James mentioned innovation as one angle or one paradigm for market access. But, Southeast Asia is also a market that is oftentimes mentioned as cumbersome and having unclear regulatory requirements. How has this evolved, especially with developments like free trade agreements and mutual recognition agreements coming to the fore?
I can see why multinational companies can be concerned about operating in the region. I think broadly, regulatory requirements may be more fragmented, and companies that are new to the region could generally have less familiarity with perhaps the differences and the nuances in the laws and the regulatory framework. More operationally, I think companies do need to take into account variances in the efficiency, competency, sophistication, and even the general disposition of the different regulatory agencies. And I think that the industry at large have come to accept that it is unlikely to end up in a state of complete and comprehensive regulatory harmonization. It's probably improbable or very far away. So I think from Singapore's perspective, we are looking at mitigating this problem in a couple of ways. So one is strengthening our leadership in regulatory excellence for the region. Two is partnering companies in training and competency development. And three, at the G2G level, forging agreements such as the RCEP and TPP to really nudge countries towards the middle ground and to create clarity on the operating environment. On the first point, we really have to give credit to Singapore's HSA, the Health Sciences Authority, which of course has proven itself to be the region's most credible and rigorous regulatory agency, and one that has provided strong leadership and partnership for the region's other regulatory agency. Now, of course, these countries retain their regulatory independence, but I think it's no secret that they often look to the HSA for guidance. And moreover, the HSA is also an extremely progressive agency. In fact, just recently, they had unveiled some of the latest regulatory framework for cell, tissue, and gene therapy products. And so it's always beneficial to have a strong regulatory agency and to be able to operate in an environment where other agencies are also looking up to them.
Thanks, Kenny. This is helpful and certainly heartening to debunk some of these misconceptions about Southeast Asia, and hopefully regulatory affairs is a starting point in terms of making the market more accessible to companies and to deliver healthcare for the people in Southeast Asia. James, if I may come back to you and pick up on where we left off. I mentioned about wanting to find out a bit more about why BD decided to use Singapore as your hub in Asia, spanning the entire value chain from manufacturing to innovation to regulatory affairs, for instance. So could you share a bit more about why Singapore for Becton Dickinson?
I think Becton Dickinson has a long history, starting from 1989, where we put up manufacturing plant and started the commercial HQ in Singapore. The real reason why BD comes to Singapore is the access to talent. As you drive commercial organization, what you need is people who are familiar with commercial practices and also the norm of doing business and the insights of the countries. It's not just kind of shooting someone and then start learning about what the region is. So cultural understanding and the knowledge about healthcare system and how to interact with governments and distributors is a very important part for the accessibility. You have that 5-hour window as you travel around the region, and it's a hub for many things, like air hub, seaport, and many other. So it's only natural that you develop your business in Singapore and spread across Southeast Asia. So we saw Southeast Asia as one of the fastest growing in terms of percentage of growth. So it was double-digit growth for us for many years in the region, starting from 1994 when I joined the company, and then it started to grow the business. There's a segment of what you, Kenny, mentioned earlier on about the growing middle class that really wants good quality healthcare. That's appropriate for any of the multinational that is thinking about really introducing their solutions in the region. You can access a ready pool of growing middle class and also access public healthcare and to really advance the world of health. And that's where you drive the innovation that what we've been talking about. And then you have good policies from the government. It's one that is critical to keep going in spite of COVID. Of course, you implement all the testing regime and temperature taking and all, but you kept the system running. Now, some countries didn't keep the system running. So if you want to go and choose a place to operate where you have a central hub for crisis management, this will be the ideal place, right? So it manifests itself in good policies, good talent, and then end-to-end solution was really maintained. So when BD look back and say, wow, crisis in COVID 2 years, did you impact your customer? Very little, because of the way we have able to keep it as our regional center for even stocking some of our staff and also supplying the solution and connectivity. And we have a great team of people that is able to work through the logistics center, the manufacturing sites. So that's one of the key reasons for choosing Singapore.
Right. Thanks, James. I think you mentioned three very pertinent aspects: availability of talent, the business environment essentially enabled by very pro-business government policies, as well as connectivity, both from an business infrastructure as well as the trade and logistics kind of connectivity. So Kenny, given your rich experience in terms of advising medtech companies with ambitions of growing in Southeast Asia, can you also add on to some pertinent factors that you have observed that companies need to consider when setting up in Southeast Asia? And more importantly, how can Singapore support the ambitions of these companies?
Right. So today, Singapore is arguably Asia's leading healthcare and life sciences hub, with a lot of activities across the food value chain. So more than 80 RHQ of the world's leading biopharma and medtech companies in R&D, and more than 60 manufacturing plants producing APIs, biologics, microarrays, thermocyclers, and mass spec. So the whole gamut for the regional and global markets. Now, I think medtech companies find Singapore to be an attractive location for some of their most important operations because it's where they can find, as James pointed out, high quality talent, manufacturing and supply chain capabilities, an ecosystem of R&D and innovation capability to co-develop and commercialize new products and services. On the talent front, talent is always the top priority for us when we do our strategy work and when we speak to companies and key executives like James. And so we continue to build a strong pipeline of core STEM and related talent. So almost 20,000 graduates annually across the different levels, universities, polytechnics, and ITEs. We also work very closely with industry and academia to establish more specialized training programs to further build up targeted skill sets. So for example, NUS and the Regulatory Affairs Professional Society actually offers a graduate certificate in medical devices regulatory affairs, essentially to help train up the pool of regulatory affairs talent to be able to navigate the complex landscape in the region. Similarly, the Singapore Biodesign, which is a national level talent development program that has trained over 400 biomedical science professionals, with some already starting their own biomedical sciences companies. Now, of course, we recognize that every company is different and there are some skill sets which are more niche or more specific to them. So this is also why we work closely with companies on a one-to-one basis to support training programs meant to build up more specialized capabilities. Second, on the manufacturing and supply chain front, Singapore is a critical manufacturing base, producing a diverse range of medical technology products from implantable pacemakers to contact lens and life science instruments for global markets. Now, companies leverage on Singapore's strong design and engineering capabilities and base of automation suppliers and high quality assurance standards to undertake the manufacturing of high-quality medical products. Companies can also tap on a rich ecosystem of local and regional suppliers and contract manufacturers who are able to provide key consumables, components, sub-assemblies, and final products. James spoke about how important having a strong connectivity and logistics infrastructure is for business. So certainly you can imagine that the Singapore government does invest very substantial amount of resources in making sure that we have the right infrastructure. Think about some of the recent efforts in relocating the ports to the Tuas area, essentially setting up the mega ports. Now third, Singapore of course has a rich network of ecosystem of top new universities, research institutes, and innovative startups and other key enablers. This ecosystem of potential R&D partners really allow medtech companies to tap on the vibrant open innovation ecosystem, find the right partners to develop and commercialize new products and services. With a strong presence of more than 25 R&D centers established by MNCs and a local pool of more than 220 medtech startups and small and medium enterprises, I think medtech companies have increasingly been plugging into this network of innovation, talent and ideas to develop next generation products and solutions for the region. They're also able to partner with regulators and hospital clusters to conduct the validation and clinical studies as part of the commercialization process. So hopefully that gives you a quick overview. Essentially, the three ways that companies really can tap into the ecosystem in Singapore. So one, access to talent. Two, access to the manufacturing and supply chain capabilities. And three, access to Singapore's rich network of universities, research institutes, and innovative startups for their innovation needs. I think these together will help a company to navigate the regional landscape and to succeed in the market.
Thanks, Kenny. I think that is very pertinent, and you have actually set us up for the final part of today's podcast. And I wanted to focus our attention to look at the outlook for the industry. And I thought it would be apt to have both of you complete this sentence. Southeast Asia is a winning proposition for medtech because, and maybe I can get James to start off first.
Southeast Asia is a winning proposition for BD because it's a growing market with talent opportunity, young population, and also aging population that enable us to really innovate our solutions throughout the region. It has the potential to grow very fast as the base of where it is operating is actually very low GDP per capita, and the focus on healthcare is becoming the priority for the governments.
And how about you, Kenny? For the final word for this episode, Southeast Asia is a winning proposition for medical technology because...
I think because this is one of the most vibrant regions in the world with tremendous opportunity for growth, partnership, and experimentation. It's an area where companies can dare to be bold and really try out things that may be very different from the other regions. So I think it's just a very exciting region for companies to play in today.
Thank you, Kenny and James. And with that, we have come to the end of this podcast. Our sincere thanks to James and Kenny for your interesting insights and stories, and to our audience for tuning in. We hope that our audience can join us for our next episode, in which we will cover the emerging agri-technology and sustainability landscape in Southeast Asia. Besides this podcast series, Incorp Global and the EDB have also worked together to develop an ebook that seeks to unpack the business landscapes and operating environment in each of the 10 Southeast Asian countries, to help business leaders and entrepreneurs better understand the different Southeast Asian markets, to chart your market entry and expansion strategies. To download this ebook and access information on Incorp's other services, please do visit us at our website at www.incorp.asia. Thank you once again to both gentlemen and our audience. Please take care, and we hope to see you soon.
Thanks.
Cheers, guys.